Every healing that ever takes place in your life, whether it's in you or someone you've worked for, every healing spiritually is a change of minds from the human to the divine. And in that change of minds, the bridegroom cometh. There is an inner marriage with the truth, which externalizes as the improved condition. Whether it's business, or marriage, or body, or whatever the problem had been. There's one little secret that has come to me that I'd like to share with you. It's a very subtle one. And it's for those of you who are doing healing for others. You'll discover that someone phones you and asks you for some help. Now, when that happens, what has really happened is this. The universal false mind has put into that individual who has called you a problem. And that universal false mind continues to you and phones you to tell you that there is a problem in your friend. It isn't spirit awakening you. It is the same universal false mind which put the problem in your friend now calls you up and says, "See, Mary has a problem. Help her." So it is hit your friend, and now it's coming to you to tell you to help her. And your function at that point is to get into the infinite mind. Otherwise, it's going to use the evidence that Mary is sick to persuade you that such a condition exists. And it doesn't. It only exists in that mind which has come to you announcing the problem. And so the moment you face it, as if to say to it, "Well, look, I know who you are. You're the fellow who's causing all the trouble. You're telling me Mary is sick, as you've told her, and I'm stopping you right here." As soon as you break the continuity of that mind which is announcing to you the sickness, you're going to help break it for Mary. It's going to stop in its tracks where you stand in the truth. If it's going to say to you that Mary is dying, and you're going to accept that, then you're just delaying the time when you're in Mary's problem yourself. Because Mary can never die. Mary can never be sick. There can never be evil in reality. There can never be discord in reality. And when you are aware that all discord occurs in the human mind and nowhere else, you'll see why this chapter is titled Transcending Mind. Because it's really saying transcending error, transcending discord, transcending death, transcending everything that is unlike God. From Joel's chapter, mind is the substance of every form of sin, disease, death, false appetite, lack, limitation, wars, rumors of wars, and all the other things listed under the word evil. Every problem that we can possibly face in this world is a product of mind. And mind thinks. And therefore the thought of that mind is the source of the problem. And so as we rest in the thought of our mind, even though we are convinced that we are pure and good and well-meaning, the thought of our mind contains world thought. And that world thought, in the thought of our mind, externalizes as the evils of our experience. This should be very clear to all of us. And then the solution to it becomes clear. We must come over world thought, which functions in us. We must come over the subconscious, the unconscious, and the conscious thought of our own mind. Because mind is the father of the evils of our world. Whatever you're suffering from is not what it appears to be. It isn't a bad heart. It's something, some thought in mind, which to you is a bad heart. It isn't a tumor on the brain. It's some thought in mind which is manifesting as a tumor. And it isn't a thought about a tumor. It is the belief that a tumor can be, which has not been crossed out in your consciousness. It is the belief that a heart can falter, which has not been crossed out in your consciousness. You may not even consciously have had the thought. But in the acceptance of a human heart, of a human brain, you are subject to the material laws of a human brain and a human heart. Human thought is about human things. Divine thought is not about a human heart, is not about a human brain. Divine thought never enters into a human thought about a human thing. And therefore, in divine thought, there can never be a tumor in a human brain. Divine thought knows nothing about the human brain. Divine thought can never have a faltering heart because it knows nothing about a heart to begin with. And we learn to make this mind an instrument for the divine, so that divine thought flows through this mind. And in divine thought, there is nothing about a heart or a brain or a liver or a lung or a material thing. And so we don't have good matter in divine thought or bad matter. We don't have matter. And that becomes your unconscious thought, your subconscious thought, and your conscious thought. Only divine thought moving through you manifests as divine form. Now, Isaiah said it this way, because my thoughts are not your thoughts. And remember, when Isaiah speaks, this is the voice of God speaking through the prophet. And the voice of God is saying, for my thoughts are not your thoughts. Neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth, and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper on the thing whereunto I sent it. And so the power of divine thought in you must fulfill its idea in you. It cannot return void. It must perform that which it starts to perform in you. And its performance in you is the perfection of that divine thought. Just as human thought in you performs as both good and evil, divine thought in you performs only in the perfection of the divine. Now we go back to Joel and see how he phrases this, so that you see this chapter is a very crucial point in our spiritual history. The original, the basic creative principle and the substance of life is God, soul, consciousness. But mind is the instrument through which God's activity takes place, because properly understood and utilized, mind is an instrument of God. When the mind is open to receive the divine impulse, then harmonious, perfect form flows out from it. And so Joel is taught that mind, imbued with divine truth, becomes a law of harmony unto itself and its externalization called matter. When you take the time to turn away from the thoughts of this world, which flow consciously and unconsciously through your mind, and to fill your mind with the truth about the reality of God, the allness of God, the presence of God, rejecting every opposite that is unlike God, this truth in you is the purification, the preparation of the mind to become a perfect instrument for the divine. And then, as you remember, this camera that is photographing your thoughts only has divine thought to photograph, and that's all it can manifest. When we were promised dominion in Genesis, it was that dominion which is the dominion of the divine mind functioning in us. Your dominion over land, sea, and air includes dominion over this body, includes dominion over all material things and conditions. But it is not a dominion which uses power for self-glory. It is rather the immunity to the false powers of the world. It isn't something you use, it is something you let use you. Meek unto the Father, we inherit this earth. Now, when you have transcended mind for a moment, a second, a day, an hour, the next question is, how do I stay there? And there are no shortcuts. We don't transcend mind to have an experience or a sensation, or just to get rid of a bump. We transcend mind that we may walk this earth as a son of spirit, in our rightful place, in our rightful body, in our rightful mind, in our rightful life. It is only then that the words eternal, infinite, and immortal begin to mean something. They mean nothing to a human being. The freedom we talk about as a human being has nothing to do with being immortal. But in reality, the only freedom we know is eternality, immortality, infinity. We learn that infinity is the only reality there is. Anything that is finite is not real. And because only reality exists, we are that living infinity ourselves. And we do not accept the outer fraction which poses as us. When you were given a name, you may not know at the time, but you picked your own name. Your parents didn't give it to you. They believe they did. But just as Mary was given the name Jesus from within, so were your parents given your name. You picked it. You picked it because you were a living consciousness and you were identifying yourself. And when you came forth and someone said, this is what we'll call this child, they did not know that they were not naming a child. They were putting a name on a consciousness, because that's all that was there, a consciousness. And that's all that is there now, a consciousness. And your name is not the name of your body, it is the name of your consciousness. And that consciousness is pushing forth that which is called the form. That consciousness is bringing into visibility that which is called the conditions of that form and the experiences of that form. And that name of that consciousness will change someday. It will be given another name because that consciousness, which is you, which is not this form, but which is your name, your reality, that consciousness is still changing to receive more and more of its own divinity. And when it receives its divinity, it is dissolved as this name, and its new name is Christ. When it becomes Christ consciousness, then it becomes another form out here. The Christ consciousness now transforms this form and its experiences, and Christ is risen in you. We transcend mind that we may transcend the false physical limited self, which we were forced to accept because there was no one to tell us that God is the only being, that spirit is the only substance, and that we are that substance. Truth in consciousness is your protector against the thoughts of the world. Truth in consciousness ultimately outpictures as truth in experience, purifying this mind still further, ultimately making it a perfect channel for the divine. And then Christ formed in you is divine thought manifesting invisibly as your spiritual self. That's why we transcend mind. That Christ may be formed in us. For when you walk in the Christ, then all conditions of the flesh cease to be. And in your flesh you know God. I'd like to recommend that you reread this chapter, bringing to it the awareness, as you read the chapter, that the mind of God wrote the chapter, and that the mind of God in you is reading the chapter. That no other mind is present. And I believe you'll find that you're not living in the effects of a human mind while you're doing it. That's what we do out here. We live in the effects of the human mind and the judgments about those effects, pyramiding one error upon the other. Now let us see everyone in their divine image, not by looking at them with a human mind, but by resting in that mind which can redefine the reality of everyone around you. If you were left to your human mind, you wouldn't try very hard to find the divinity in others. This human mind is too hard-pressed, trying to live its own life, to be concerned about finding the divinity in others. And if we don't transcend this human mind, we'll never look for the divinity in others. We'll always live within this finite, material sense of self. It's only when you allow yourself to look for the divinity in others and find you cannot do it with your human mind, that you release the activity of the divine, and lo and behold, this becomes your expanded consciousness. Ultimately, you're going to find that the Christ you recognize in your neighbor is the very reason that you have been able to come up above a limited concept of yourself. And now you're coming further out into the realization of one life, one being, one self, as much yourself 500 miles away as where your body seems to be standing now. We're coming out of our personal concepts of things. We're lifting the veil of our own blindness. We're not shortening God's arm. We're recognizing that there is one self on this earth, and it is I. We're removing the mask of a limited human mind, here and there and everywhere, and not accepting the beliefs of another human mind, as well as my own human mind, but lifting the mask of all human minds to rest, to bask in that present perfection. Until you feel it, until you witness it in the inner and then manifested in the outer. If you can feel the Christ of your neighbor through resting in the infinite mind, you're on your way to real illumination. Your expanded consciousness is going to find the spirit in a flower, the spirit in a tree, the spirit in everything that walks this earth, because you won't be looking through double vision, through a divided consciousness. Now, the single eye, the undivided consciousness of the one infinite mind, must witness itself in all that you do. You're transcending your human sense of being. And the core of that human sense of being is the limited human mind. You might make a few experiments. We have one woman who received a plant from a friend, and within 2 or 3 days, the leaves and blossoms all fell off. And so she called a florist, and they sent another one. But something prompted her to keep the one in which all the blossoms fell off. And within 2 or 3 days, in her realization that God doesn't make mistakes, that only spirit is present, that only spiritual form can be present, she began to witness new blossoms within 3 days on the dead branches that really weren't dead at all. Her tree was having, her little bush was having a resurrection. And the beauty of it was that all of this was new to her within the past 9 months. And experience after experience is making her open up to a life within herself that she didn't know was there, which is capable of transforming the deadness of this world into the reality of life. Oh, that's just one incident. But everywhere it's happening, in some places slower than others, but happening. That which appears to be dead is being revealed as impossible, because life has no opposite. Only life exists. And we're learning that. And we're expecting it to show itself. Our belief is that life has no opposite. And that belief manifests as the blossom on a tree, or the blossom on a bush, as the color in a cheek that was pale, as the movement of an arm where there was only paralysis. Life has no opposite. And in that belief, which is not the belief of a human mind, you are accepting the infinite omnipotence of the divine mind. You are purifying. You are expanding. And it will demonstrate itself through you as truth in consciousness made externally manifest. Perhaps as loaves and fishes in the sky, gold in a fish's mouth, fishes in the nets where there were no fishes before. Always, this is divine mind externalized, Christ mind made visible. And it is effortless. It is never channeled by a human mind. It is merely an appearance brought forth by the divine mind, which infallibly meets every need at the precise necessary moment in the precise necessary way. The way to grace is through the transcending of the human thought, of the human mind. The next chapter is the unconditioned universe. And I believe it's a very short one, so you ought to be able to reread the one we just did, because we go over these things a little too fast. As you reread it, get yourself set up for the next, and then do the next, you'll find they make a perfect unit. The transcending of this mind brings you into the unconditioned mind. And then you drop the belief in conditions in order for the unconditioned universe to manifest through your unconditioned mind. Thank you very much.